Welcome back to Over the Next Hill Fitness Podcast. I'm Carla Coffey, your coach and host for today's program. Today we have an Olympian, and he's an athlete, he's a coach. We want to give a great big welcome to Jeff Galloway. Welcome to the show, Jeff.
Great to be here, Carla.
I am so honored to have you on the show. So I just hit a few of the highlights of you. Can you tell us a little bit more about you and how long you've been running and when you got started?
Yes, I began running in 1958. I was entering the eighth grade at a school that required boys to go out for athletics after school. I had not done much of that, hardly any of it, because during my first 7 years of school, my father had been in the Navy, and I had gone to 13 schools during those first 7 years. We were constantly bouncing around, and I never got involved in sports or physical fitness or whatever. Was overweight, lazy, and forced with reality. I fell in with a group of kids in my classes who were runners, mainly because they were funny. And they dragged me out during the winter for winter cross country. Well, I just absolutely hated it at first because I was exhausted and didn't have any conditioning. But I very quickly found that within 30 minutes after a very hard, exhausting workout, I felt better in my head and in my spirit than I had ever felt. And the other thing was, having gone to 13 schools in 7 years of classes, I found it very difficult in a new area to meet friends. As soon as I got with the cross-country guys, I had instant friends. I had good friends. And I found that true with any running group that I've ever been a part of. And so I set as my goal to be able to keep up with my teammates. And it was very, very difficult. I did not show a lot of promise. It took me until my senior year to be able to qualify to get into the state championships in Georgia. And Georgia was not a very good state competitively. I just wasn't good. And I went on to a small liberal arts school, an academic school that didn't even offer scholarships. But as fate would have it, the class behind me, a fella entered named Amby Burfoot, and 2 years later, when I was a senior, we were joined by Bill Rogers. All three of us were there, we didn't get scholarships. They didn't have them. We were at an academic school for the academics. Senior year, Amby won the Boston Marathon. It's the only time an undergraduate has won the Boston Marathon before or since. And, of course, we know what Bill Rogers went on to do. And it was just a wonderful coincidence that has yielded long-term friendships between the three of us. As a matter of fact, I kept in touch on a number of issues with Bill Rogers just during the last week and talked to Amby quite often. Went on to, after graduation, to go into the Navy because I had a low draft number. That was the period of the draft. And went over to Vietnam for 12 months. Unfortunately, that's where I was exposed to Agent Orange, which later on became an issue, and my heart attack that occurred 2 years ago. But I got out of the Navy in 1970 and set as my sights the possibility of qualifying to get into the Olympic trials. And I was way away from that, but I gave myself goals every 6 months and pretty much hit them, but I still had a good ways to go going just right before the Olympic trials. Went to the national championships. I needed a minute and a half PR in the 10K, and I ran 2 minutes faster and qualified to get into the Olympic trials. And then, as fate would have it, on the day of the trials, it was a really hot day, and I had been training in Florida for the previous 2 years. I knew how to pace myself in the heat, and went out in last place for the first mile. And then people started coming back to me. So I passed them one after another. And with about 2 miles left, I realized that I was in third place, and then very quickly into second place and qualified for the U.S. Olympic team.
That's amazing.
A week later, I paced one of my teammates from the Florida Track Club through the marathon because he had been disqualified. During the last stretch of the 10K, my teammate Jack Batchelor was in third place and was passed by another runner who happened to be the son of the mayor of Eugene, Oregon, where the trials were being held. And of course, the crowd was cheering him on. So John Anderson passes my buddy Jack about 30 yards from the finish line, but Jack was exhausted and he was weaving, and he bumped John as John went by, and an official disqualified Jack. I've never seen that before or since, but it happened then. Significance was that a week later, if I had been able to qualify in the marathon, I would have dropped out of the 10K, but that was no longer possible because Jack wouldn't move up if I did that. So I paced him through and was having to cheer him on and be the lookout and keep the positive mantras going like crazy during the last 5 miles. We entered that stadium together, and the crowd was on their feet. I can still remember how my ears were just pounding. And so I paced Jack right to the finish line, backed off so that he could be the official qualifier. And it was just a wonderful experience to help a teammate become an Olympian. Olympics in Munich were a great experience. I did not run very well, but I immediately went into teaching. I taught for a year and then decided that I wanted to help others get into running and change their lives in the way that my life had been changed. So I opened the very first running specialty store in the United States in 1973. And it's Fidipides. We're celebrating our 50th year this year. It was the platform for my training programs, for clinics, for coaching, and for all the things that I do now. And it's just a wonderful life.
Wow, that's such an incredible story. So the store, is it still in the same location? And it's in Georgia, is that correct?
It is in Georgia. We have two stores in Atlanta. And I actually started the store in Tallahassee because that was my training ground leading up to the Olympic trials. I actually went to Florida State University and got my master's degree as I was training towards the Olympic trials. But after a couple of years in Tallahassee, I had a partner, and we both decided that we wanted to do things with the store that were a little bit different. And it was amicable separation, but I took my half of the stock up to Atlanta, and he stayed in Tallahassee. And that's how Fidipides started.
That's really cool. So you have two stores, and do each of them hold the clinics and all that you do for runners? Both?
Yes, absolutely. And we have two Galloway training programs in Atlanta, and they quite often meet at the store and do their runs from the store and so forth.
Okay. So how did you come up with this walk-run Galloway system that is so popular?
A few months after I opened my store, I waited on a customer who was in charge of a local not-for-credit series of courses that were open to the public. Things like auto mechanics or basic accounting, things like that. And after we were talking, he said, you ought to teach one of my classes on running. So thinking that I could attract customers, which I dearly needed to do, I agreed to do that. And he gave me the leeway to hold the class wherever I wanted to. So what I did is I found a way to see what level the folks in the class were in terms of their fitness. And it broke down into three groups. I met with each group on a separate day of the week. And that way I could run with them, I could coach them, and we could do the drills and the other things that I do. And during those runs, I realized that to keep the group together, we were going to have to take walk breaks. And so we did right from the beginning. And my first rule was a real simple rule, and that was when anybody in the group started huffing and puffing greatly more than they were, we walked. And so that was our clue. And at the end of the class, 10-week class, we had every one of them be successful in finishing either a 5K or a 10K. But what was really impressive to me is we had no injuries. Mm-hmm. And I'd never been with a group of 20 or more runners for 2 months in which there were no injuries. And I realized right then that it had to be taking the walk breaks from the beginning of every single run.
Yeah, that is one of the major benefits I've found for myself since I've started using it, is I haven't been injured in a really long time. I'm pretty positive to say since I started the run-walk method, it has been that way. So how did you decide on the ratios? Because my ratio is I like to run 6 minutes and walk 30 seconds. That just works for me. I don't get overtired, but I will do a marathon and still do like a 4-hour finish. I can. I mean, I go slower a lot of the times, but I can do a 4-hour finish fairly with no discomfort at that point. And I got the ratio just from poking around on your website and just kind of came up with that specific number for me. But how did you decide on ratios?
Well, that's actually a very old ratio that goes back about 35 years. What I did is I started collecting data in the mid-70s about what ratios of running to walking worked for paces, for various paces. And now that database encompasses over 500,000 runners. So these are people that have reported in. During my season, I used this ratio and I ran this pace in my key race and so forth. And so I databased all that stuff. And of course, when you get a large database like that, you get more and more accurate. And that's what has happened. So the ratios now, any given pace ratio is based on at least 50,000 people reporting in. Mm-hmm. And so it's just works for practically anybody. And in your case, for example, I'm glad that you are able to feel good with your 6 minutes running. However, I am sure you could run faster and feel even better, and particularly be stronger at the end if you used a different ratio. Now, you say you're around 5 hours?
Four.
Okay, so 9-minute pace. That usually is a run 2 minutes, walk 30 seconds, or run 90 seconds and walk 30. And I would suggest that you try that on some shorter runs in which you try to hit 9-minute pace and just see how it feels. And it may take you a couple of weeks to get up to speed with it because it is so different than what you're doing now. The big difference in time improvement occurs at the end of half marathons or marathons. You can imagine that running 2 minutes instead of running 6 minutes is going to leave your legs stronger at the end. Mm-hmm. And that is a fact. And that's so instead of slowing down at the end, people are able to maintain pace. And that maintaining pace or speeding up is what gives them extra time at the end.
Okay, so you're saying I should go down to a 2-minute run and a 30-second walk?
I think you should try that. Part of our Galloway program, we have components for just about every aspect of running. And these components are cognitive tools that we use. We have the magic mile to be able to set up what is a realistic goal for the next 6 months, and also what would be a safe pace for long runs with the walk break suggestions. And by the way, this is on our new app, which you can find at jeffgalloway.com. It has a free download and a free run, walk, run timer. And you better get used to my voice because I recorded all the prompts and tips and the coaching along the way. But one of the cognitive tools is done on a Tuesday. And so on Tuesday, the normal workout would be a gentle warm-up followed by four each of my form drills, the cadence drill and the acceleration glider drill. And then I like for my folks that I coach to go into a series of 4 to 6, either quarter miles or half miles, and run those right at the pace that they want to run in their next race. And take a 3-minute walk in between each one of those. So the first goal of doing those segments is to get your timing, get your pace down so that you know pace, you know that pace that you want to run in a race. And the second one is on each one of those, either quarter miles or half miles, you use a different run, walk, run strategy. And so in your case, you could start out with run 2 minutes and walk 30 seconds. And on the second one, you could try a 90-second run, 30-second walk. And maybe on the third one, you would push it up a little bit to 2.5 minutes and 30 seconds and so forth. And you can go in between. I've had hundreds of my e-coaching clients over the years who I've encouraged to try quirky ratios. And they found that the quirky ones work better. It's sort of like their signature. But you find that out by trying it out. And I think you're going to find that your legs have a lot more juice at the end if you will use a shorter run segment.
Okay, I will definitely try that because I am always up for good suggestions. So will that just allow me to be faster, or will I have to run faster at that 2 minute? Do you know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, you will have to run a little faster. It's not a lot faster, and it really surprises people. But the bottom line is because you're taking those walk breaks much more frequently, you're erasing the fatigue buildup much more frequently. And so the first 10 or 20 walk breaks, you're erasing all of the fatigue buildup that's going on. With a 6-minute run, you're not going to be erasing all of the fatigue buildup during the first 20 or so walk breaks. But you'll notice that. And so give it a try. Now, in the long run, the concept is simple, and that is you do what works for you.
For sure.
You try these things out and find out what seems to be more sustainable, and then go with what's working for you. But you should be open to experimenting from time to time, because you'll be surprising yourself.
Okay. Yeah, I definitely will try some different ratios. So why the 30-second walk? Is that just enough to recover, or is that what you found statistically or scientifically to work best?
About 12 years ago, we embarked on a series of studies to see what duration of walk break bestowed the greatest amount of recovery and erasure of fatigue. And we came up with 30 seconds. We found that those who walked longer, such as a minute, would actually start slowing down during the second half of long races and long runs. And it became harder and harder to restart again after taking a walk break. And with the 30-second walk break, that was either minimized or it simply didn't happen. And so we saw improvement in times. Example was people that used to run half marathons in 2 hours, running 4 minutes and walking a minute. When they shifted to run 2 minutes, walk 30 seconds, there was an average of around 4 minute time improvement.
Wow. That's huge.
It is. At that pace, it's huge.
That's huge. So does the run walk work for all distances, 5K through ultras?
It does, although you would change the ratio on the shorter distances. You don't have to run as short. You can lengthen the run segment for 5Ks and 10Ks.
Okay. And then for an ultra, would you keep it at like I have a 50-miler coming up. So would a 2-minute run and a 30-second walk be better for that distance?
Well, certainly it would, but just depending on where you are with your distance conditioning and how tough the terrain is, more frequent walks in the beginning is the usual format for ultras, because it's all about being strong at the end. Mm-hmm. And the more you save in the first half, the stronger you can be at the end.
Okay, sure, that makes total sense. So one of my athletes, Amanda, had a question for you. She wanted me to ask, how do you not just want to keep walking since it's easier? Is that because you're only walking 30 seconds versus a longer walk? Do you know what I'm saying?
Could you repeat the question? I didn't quite get her specific wording of that.
Okay. She wants to know why would you start running again when walking is so much easier?
Well, you don't have to. I mean, if you prefer walking, then just walk, because, you know, as long as you're in a race where your walking speed is enough to stay ahead of the people that, you know, close the race, walk. The main difference between running and walking, as identified by thousands of studies that I learned about when I researched my book, Mental Training, the difference between running and walking is that running stimulates certain brain circuits to a higher level. The circuit for a better attitude, the circuit for more energy, the circuit for empowerment, the growth of new brain cells. All of these are relating to hormones that are produced. And walking does produce those hormones for those three effects. However, running stimulates the production of a lot more of them. So you get a better feeling afterwards. You feel, the thinking process has been shown to be better, and a lot of other things. The other thing, if you're interested in longevity, the studies tend to show that walking, for every hour you walk, statistically, you will add about 3 hours to your life. Hmm. For running, you add 7 hours per hour of running. So there's a greater extension. There are more benefits going on. And the researchers I talked to said that it had to be the extra mental benefits that you get when you run over walking.
Man, I'm going to live forever. I put in a lot of hours. Yeah, so then it must, because her other question was, how does it make you faster? And that just must be because you don't get fatigued, right?
That's right. The insertion of a walk break will erase, first of all, the fatigue on muscles. So the muscles will be stronger at the end. And so instead of slowing down, you're the one that can keep going. And that means time. You know, instead of slowing down, you're staying the same or you're speeding up. Mm-hmm. And that's where you gain that. The other benefit with taking the walk breaks is that you take away the stress buildup on the weak links that cause aches and pains. And when you're in pain at the end of a race, most people are going to slow down. And you can avoid most or all of that with the right run, walk, run strategy.
So with your athletes that you started out with when you first started the run, walk, did they also just accumulatively get faster from getting stronger, from being able to run longer? Does that make sense?
Well, they did at first. You identified a point here. And the point is that run, walk, run allows people to do longer long runs prior to long races. And that is also a way to improve time. And we've studied that. We found that those who are training for half marathons and run up to 10 miles, when they go up to our 14-mile recommendation 2 weeks before a half marathon, they have an average improvement of 7 minutes.
Wow.
7 minutes. But if people are running the long runs too hard, they may not be able to get up to 14 miles. And I'll tell you what we found about that, and that is you can't run too slow. I mean, we've had people break 3 hours who, for whatever reason, had to do mostly walking on all of their key long runs, and they still broke 3 hours in the marathon.
Wow. That's amazing.
And we've got thousands of reports of that. You know, one lesson there is that if you are tempted to stop because you don't feel good, you're tired and so forth, just walk it in. And you'll keep all of the benefits of the distance that you cover on that day. But it does help to go beyond race distance. In terms of a half marathon, those who used to run 14 miles but got up to a 19-miler 3 weeks before their half marathon, the average improvement is another 7 minutes.
That's amazing. That is just amazing. Wow. I never would have thought
that.
And
you can't go too slow.
Yeah, and that's key. You know, for a lot of runners, walking is just taboo. You know, and some of my athletes, I've been purposefully scheduling walking into their running because they also don't always, when you tell them to go easy, they don't know what easy is. So I've been scheduling their speed, right, their pace, and their walk break into the easy runs now instead of just relying on them to go easy because they're a little bit stubborn. They just don't want to do the walk.
That's another advantage of the run, walk, run. You can slow people down that need that in mm-hmm. order to recover and avoid injury on long runs by simply adjusting their run, walk, run strategy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're a little bit stubborn sometimes, and it's like they won't believe you when you say, I promise, if you just put this in, you're going to feel so much better. And it's like, you know the old adage, no pain, no gain, and you just can't get that out of their heads. They're like, well, I feel like I didn't do anything. That's great, because you just covered 10 miles and you don't feel like you did anything. That's what we're looking for. But it's so hard.
Well, we've got over 500,000 success stories to back that up.
Yeah, they're going to have to go read those, I think. They're not taking their coach's word for it. So, just to get back real quick to the distances. So if I'm running a 5K, I'll do a longer run with still the 30-second walk. But if I'm doing a marathon, I'm going to do a shorter run period, so say 2 minutes, with the 30-second walk. And I'm going that's going to be my ratios.
Yeah, 6 minutes of running in a 5K would be fine.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, so see, all this time I've been doing it for a marathon, I'm running the wrong race with the right ratio.
Well, that's okay. I mean, we can all learn, experiment, and then revise. That's the essence of being a human being.
Yeah, I was just aged into the next Boston age qualifying range. And
congratulations.
Thanks. I would never, I did run the Boston Marathon in 2017, but I haven't qualified again since. And, you know, because there wasn't a need, right? And I did happen to just qualify at my last race, had it been a Boston qualifier. And now I do want to officially qualify again, just to say I did, right? Not to go again, but just to say, wow, I still can do that. And I think if I change my ratio down to 2 minutes, I think I might just get a PR, like an actual PR for overall running. I'm really excited about that.
I agree. And in the marathon, what we recommend for long runs is going up to 29 miles. We found that the difference between a 26-mile longest run and a 29-mile longest run, and they would be done either 3 or 4 weeks before the marathon itself. But the difference is 11 minutes of time improvement on the average.
That is just amazing.
More stamina.
Yeah, that makes sense. That really makes sense. I've been doing my long runs based on heart rate as well. So not only do I do the walk break, but I try to keep my easy runs super easy. And that in itself has really conditioned me to not be tired at the end of a marathon. It's just
good.
Yeah, it's amazing.
The heart rate on long runs can be misleading, because the percentage that you are generating at the beginning of a run is based on running all out for the first mile and then all out for a 5K. And you can very easily, using heart rate, run too fast and still be below what the heart rate monitor is showing you, because it's just showing you the short distance effect of the heart rate.
Yeah, I've noticed that as well, and that it jacks up, but then it just kind of evens out, and I'm like, oh, I don't know about that. So, yeah, I know they're not foolproof for sure, but so what other running tips and things can you tell my audience about you, your method, or anything else that we haven't touched on?
Well, probably the biggest effect would be mental effect. And when I wrote my book, Mental Training, I had to take 6 months off before to go through the research and then keep going through the research, because there was just a lot of stuff out there, and it's a very exciting field. But there are a lot of conflicts there. So I had to spend a lot of time comparing apples and apples and oranges and oranges. And it was so frustrating at first. And then when it finally started coming together, eureka. And here's the eureka moment. we have two different brain operating systems that we use as human beings. We have the ancient subconscious brain, the reflex brain, sometimes called the monkey brain, that has a million times the operating capacity compared with our poor little human brain. The human brain has only been around for a relatively short time compared with the monkey brain. Now, the human brain, on the other hand, will override the monkey brain if you use it. But most runners, when they start running, just put one foot in front of the other, are thinking about something else, and they let the monkey brain be in control. The problem there is with the monkey brain in control, as the fatigue builds up and the stress builds up from all sources in your life. And of course, when you're on a run, you really revisit all those sources of stress in your life, don't you? But when this happens, the monkey brain is going to send negative hormones. First, it'll send anxiety hormones. So you start the run feeling bouncy, and probably as a result, you go a little too fast in the beginning. And then at 2, 3, 4 miles, you start to get the first wave of a little fatigue, and your muscles aren't as bouncy. And the monkey brain starts sending you some anxiety hormones. You're just not as confident as you were. And then 10 miles into a 13-mile run, particularly if you've run a little too fast for the heat and so forth, you are going to start getting negative hormones that are juicing you by the monkey brain. And monkey brain's main goal is to keep you alive. And, you know, you're putting stress, a lot of physical stress on you when you run long. But by having mantras and by having cognitive strategies, you can turn all that around. Because as soon as you start using a cognitive strategy, the human brain takes over, it overrides the monkey brain and does away with the negative hormones. And as long as you keep using a cognitive strategy, you can stay away from those negative hormones.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Do you have a mantra that you use?
I can do it. I can do it. I'm in control. This is my day. That, you know, positive mantras are best, but they don't have to be positive. Any words that you say, and you just think about it just a little bit, will allow you to turn on your human brain. Another trick that works extremely well is to count your steps. Because when you start counting for any reason, you turn on the left side of your human brain. And that also turns on the right side. The right side is the wonderful, creative, and intuitive side that has sources of all types of strength and creative solutions to problems and so forth. So you're not feeling so good? Count your steps.
I know in a race what helps me. My mantra usually in a race is, I'm a machine. I'm a machine.
Good.
I'm a machine.
Good.
But
yeah.
Also... Also, thanking all the volunteers, the policemen, whoever's out there, that puts that on me, and I'm not thinking about myself, right? That, I mean, it puts that on them, where I'm thanking them, and I forget about how I feel. So that helps me too, other than my I'm a machine.
Yeah, anytime that you engage in an activity that turns on that human brain, and certainly interacting with other people will do that. And because, you know, as soon as you say something, your mind, your human brain is going to be ready to get a response and be able to react to that. That's cognitive frontal lobe human brain behavior.
Yeah, because those monkey brains sure can get in the way. I think a lot of runners really have to develop that mental toughness in order to do the things that they do. That's it, almost more so than the physical sometimes, is getting through it mentally.
Absolutely correct, and I'm very surprised that other coaches have not come into this knowledge about the two different brain operating systems. But that's the key to the whole thing. Have a cognitive strategy, and you can be in control over your motivation.
Absolutely. That is great. I need to get that on a t-shirt. Any last thoughts that you want these people to know? I will definitely put your links in the show notes. But is there anything else, that one-liner tips or anything you have for us?
Well, I just want everyone to enjoy their running injury-free. And my whole mission is to help people do this. And we just have thousands of people that are coming into running every month as a result of that. It's just a wonderful thing to see people have these amazing experiences that running will give you without the aches and pains. That's what we do. And take a look at us at jeffgalloway.com. We've got a whole lot of content there that's free and open to everyone. And we put on retreats and running schools. Some of them are Zoom clinics too. And we just want to help people.
Yeah, isn't that the truth? Man. Yeah, injury free is the ticket right there. And if they can, humble themselves to and start walking. I had to take myself off of Strava because I was so afraid that people would see my numbers go down and, oh, look, looks like she's walking. Well, if you're that person, then take yourself off Strava and start walking, and you have to, sometimes you just have to admit that to yourself, that that's what I have to do in order to get this to fit in.
I
So.
agree. Take control, and then everything else will start improving.
For sure. Well, Jeff, it's been such an honor to have you here. I am just over the moon that you said yes and would come on the podcast. I really appreciate your brilliance and all the things you're doing for the running community. Thank you so much.
Well, Carla, don't hesitate to reach out, or if any of your folks have any questions, my website has a free email service, so you can just ask questions. Just put Ask Jeff in the subject line.
Awesome. I will put that in the show notes as well. Well, thank you again for being here, and I will look forward to maybe a follow-up sometime.
I will be glad to do that, Carla. You do a great job.
Thank you. Bye now.
Bye.